Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Ms. Johnny Nazarian, Education Program Manager at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop titled Veterans and Cancer, Unique Challenges. This program is supported by Pfizer and was made possible through an independent grant from Merck & Co., Inc. I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before we start, I just want to let you know how many people we have on this call today. We have over 250 participants, primarily from the United States, from rural, urban, suburban, and frontier communities. We also have a number of international participants from Canada and the United Kingdom, so it is a global call. We are delighted to have all of you on this program today and that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now I'm going to introduce our first speaker. Our first speaker is Dr. Kayla Miranda, and Dr. Miranda is hematologist-oncologist at the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center, assistant professor, section of hematology and oncology, Baylor College of Medicine. Dr. Miranda will be discussing an overview of the unique challenges for veterans living with cancer, comorbidities impact on veterans, and adherence to treatment plans, taking your treatment on schedule. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Miranda.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Like she said, my name is Kayla Miranda. I am a medical oncologist in Houston at the VA, where I specialize primarily in cancers of the GI tract and digestive system. So I first want to talk about several significant challenges that I come across among veterans diagnosed with cancer. The first is really that the majority of veterans live in rural areas where they may not have access to specialists. So I often have patients who drive 2 to 3 hours for their appointments to see me. And in addition, food insecurity, lack of reliable transportation, and housing instability are unfortunately all too common. We have to work closely with social workers who help provide resources to patients to ease these burdens as they go through treatment. The second challenge I frequently see veterans with multiple cancers at once. And this may be because the veteran population is older and cancer becomes more common as we age. It may also be related to the use of tobacco products and other substances, or even due to chemical exposures during their military service. But because different cancers usually require different treatments, these cases can be very complex and often require a multidisciplinary approach to determine a treatment plan. The third challenge I come across often is that mental illness and substance abuse is very common among veterans. So for those who've battled these issues in the past, receiving this life-altering diagnosis can often cause setbacks in their mental health. And then finally, sometimes veterans enter the cancer clinic already with a stigma around the VA and a distrust in the system based on either anecdotes from friends or the media. Overall, I will say I've found that many of my patients who come to the VA with these negative expectations often leave feeling more comfortable and at ease with their care. So one unique challenge of the VA I haven't mentioned yet is that most of our veterans are living with at least one, but often several chronic medical conditions which can impact treatment. So some of the most common chronic conditions I see include metabolic disorders such as diabetes or high blood pressure, chronic kidney disease, cirrhosis, COPD, heart disease, and heart failure. So when evaluating a patient for cancer treatment, I always get a thorough medical history and I often need to coordinate with the patient's other doctors. Unfortunately, our treatments can sometimes exacerbate these medical problems, and the patient's medical conditions can increase the toxicity of our treatments. So, for example, some of our chemotherapy drugs are metabolized through the kidneys. So, with patients who have a history of chronic kidney disease may require reductions in their doses, or they may not even be a candidate for certain treatments. And another example of this is that we often give steroids just prior to chemotherapy to prevent nausea and allergic reactions. But in patients with a history of diabetes, these steroids can actually increase their blood sugar, which may require an adjustment in their diabetes medication. So as you can imagine, these situations often lead to challenges during treatment and sometimes even limit the types of therapy I can offer. But I always say I'm not just treating a cancer, I'm treating a whole person. So we always have to weigh the risks and benefits of what we're doing. So I want to pivot a little bit and talk about when we discuss the treatment plan for the first time and the treatment schedule. You know, patients are often overwhelmed and may not know what to expect. And some of our veterans have poor health literacy, and they may not even know what questions to ask. So when you first are meeting your medical oncologist, there are several questions I think are essential to answer in that first meeting. What is the type and stage of my cancer? What are the treatment options? What is the goal of the treatment? Is it to cure or is it to extend life and improve symptoms? How frequent are my treatments and for how long will I be on them? And then what side effects might I expect and how would this affect my daily activities? I think it's good to set expectations early so you can plan with your provider how to stay on schedule. And for patients who are being treated for a defined period of time with the intent to cure, we're often much more concerned with staying on schedule and we'll typically only delay treatment if absolutely necessary. However, patients with stage 4 or very advanced cancer are in many cases on therapy indefinitely. And in this situation, it's not uncommon to have treatment delays or holidays if a patient gets sick and needs a break, or if they desire some time to travel. And this is part of the art of what we do in oncology. We understand that life doesn't stop when you're diagnosed with cancer. And in fact, I would argue that those days doing the things you love or visiting friends and family become even more precious and necessary. So just to summarize, you know, while I think there are many challenges to working in a government system and some specific unique challenges for veterans living with cancer, I have loved being a physician at the VA because I get to serve this underserved group of patients while offering evidence-based care but at a fraction of the cost. And I think a unique positive that we have here at the VA is a very collaborative atmosphere between physicians, nurses, social workers, nurse navigators, nutritionists, pharmacists, and mental health providers, and all of whom are working together to take care of the patient. So again, thank you so much for letting me speak today. I look forward to your questions later on.
Thank you so much, Dr. Miranda. That was just such a comprehensive and informative overview and presentation. I'm sure there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. Okay, and our next speaker is Dr. Maria Bishop, and Dr. Bishop is Professor of Medicine, University of Arizona Cancer Center, Program Director, Hematology Oncology Section, VAMC, Chair, Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System Ethics Committee. Dr. Bishop will be discussing an overview and definition of fatigue, evaluation and treatment of fatigue, as well as Veterans Health Administration, VHA, medical centers, and non-VHA hospitals. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Bishop.
Thank you for the introduction. Hello, everyone. It is a pleasure to join you today. Fatigue is the most common side effect of cancer treatment with chemotherapy, radiation therapy, bone marrow transplantation, and other systemic therapies. So it's essential that we address fatigue as part of our veterans' care because fatigue can have such an impact on our veterans' quality of life and also impact their loved ones. The National Comprehensive Cancer Network defines cancer-related fatigue as a distressing, persistent, subjective sense, so what you feel, of physical, emotional, and/or cognitive tiredness or exhaustion related to cancer or cancer treatment that is not proportional to the recent activity and interferes with usual functioning. Evaluating and treating fatigue is essential. We look at fatigue as what we can treat, correctable causes of fatigue, and what are those symptoms that we have to add additional treatments to improve the symptoms. So factors that affect fatigue could be anemia or low red cell counts, medications, example of medications are chemotherapy, but it could also be medications that you're taking for other diseases, such as heart disease. Beta blockers can cause fatigue. Metabolic disturbances, such as high calcium levels, low potassium levels. Again, these are things that we can correct. Psychological distress, including depression, and this is very important. A good evaluation of fatigue helps to distinguish between fatigue caused from other reasons, but we must address depression, which is very treatable. Physical deconditioning, sleep disturbances such as insomnia, pain, nutritional deficiencies, for instance, vitamin D deficiencies, dehydration, and infections, and also other medical illnesses. This can include heart failure or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Treating fatigue, first step is to address those things that we can correct. So address the electrolyte imbalances, address depression, encourage appropriate physical activity. And physical activity is one of the modalities that has proven to be effective to enhance fatigue, to improve fatigue. But we have to do levels of activity that are appropriate to our patients' care that they're receiving and the disease that they are being treated for. Another strategy is to do your activities that require the most amount of energy at times when you're feeling the strongest. And don't hesitate to have people that want to help you, encourage you. We encourage you to let them help you, but still find that balance between getting exercise but receiving care. That will make the fatigue less of a burden and impact your quality of life. I would like to now spend a few moments to speak with you about the VA's partnership with our community and university providers. I have been an oncologist taking care of veterans for over 28 years. And to augment the care of our veterans, the VA offers a program called Community Care. And this program is used to provide services for our veterans that the VA does not provide. So, for example, not all VAs provide radiation oncology services. Not all VAs can serve our patients that need specialty surgery, for an example, specialty sarcoma surgery. Also, access to clinical trials. We believe that all patients in our VA system should have the same access to care, the same access to clinical trials that our patients in the university and community settings have. Also, our patients, as Dr. Miranda spoke about, travel long distances. We have a large catchment area, and we serve these patients, our veterans, by enabling them to see oncologists if they choose closer to their home. Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bishop. Just another wonderful presentation. I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you again. Okay, and our next speaker is Dr. Joseph O'Donnell, and Dr. O'Donnell is Emeritus Professor of Medicine, Department of Medicine, Emeritus Professor of Psychiatry, Department of Psychiatry, Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth, North Cotton Cancer Center. Dr. O'Donnell will be discussing helpful hints in communicating with your healthcare team and healthcare providers, as well as tips to overcome barriers in coordinating care in different healthcare settings. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. O'Donnell.
Thank you very much, Johnny. It's my great pleasure to be part of this panel and to learn things with you that are listening to this presentation, this presentation. I was an oncologist at the VA hospital for over 40 years in White River Junction, Vermont, a small rural hospital affiliated with Dartmouth. My topic is helpful hints in communication. And communication is something that when it goes right, it can make all the difference in the world. And when it goes poorly, it can really impede things. So when one thinks about communication, there's both a sender of the communication and then a receiver of the communication. And then the message itself, the words that he used, beyond the words, the body language and other things, the nonverbal parts of communication, and also the context. Sometimes words delivered in the ICU or at the bedside may be different than those words delivered in the clinic. So each of those has a big component in effective communication. One of the things that I think is always important about communication from your end, from the receiver end, is that let people know who you are. And so one of the suggestions that I would have for all of you who are seeking cancer care or getting cancer care is to maybe write even something up that says, this is who I am, this is what's important to me, these are the goals that I'd like to see happen as I go through this therapy. But I want you to know me, and I want you to know what's important to me. The second thing from the receiver end, from the sender end, often we as doctors speak in doctor speak, and this sometimes may be confusing or misunderstood, and it goes by very quickly, and often in a very, emotional situation when the disease of cancer is being discussed with you, things can go right by you or you miss your things. So one of my other recommendations as you go to your caregivers to be cared for is to write down what your concerns are and bring them to them, in writing. Think about it beforehand and make sure that you ask the questions that need to be asked. And if you don't understand certain words or certain things, please let the sender know that you don't understand words that we tend to use sometimes that aren't common speak, for instance. The other thing I would suggest in communication is bring somebody with you, because two sets of ears are better than just one. And so somebody with you, even if they can take notes about what's said, would be important. Now, there's been a movement, somewhat of a movement lately about patients recording what providers say. And I think that's a good thing. First, I would ask if it's okay with the provider if you record what they say. But then you have a chance to go home and listen to it again in a less intense setting and try and figure out exactly what the message is from them. So bring your questions beforehand. Bring somebody with you if you can, and record it if you can too. Now, finally, the other thing is often patients are reluctant to share, certain things. But what I would say is everything is important. You're the most important person with knowledge of your body. And so you want to tell stuff you may think may not be important. For instance, boy, I've got a little bit more loose bowel movements than I've had. Or, as Dr. Bishop said, I've got more fatigue than I have. No, don't keep it silent. Let your provider know, because every one of those symptoms can be a helpful hint and nip in the bud something that can get worse. And so please communicate those symptoms to your healthcare provider. The last thing they asked me to talk about was coordination of care. And one of the things that I would emphasize to all of you is that you're the key piece in all of this. You know the most about you than anybody else, than any of your other providers. One of the things about coordinating care, I'd suggest, especially in the VA system, where people tend to get on so many meds and they're long on them for long periods of time, sometimes beyond their usefulness, is to bring with you, to create for yourself, your list of medications and when you take them, and bring those with you to the various providers. And also, as I said before, you let the providers know what's important to you, what makes you tick, what your goals are, what the things that are important, and what other doctors may have said to you or other providers may have said to you that you find confusing. And so ask questions, bring those questions to each provider and keep them on task to try and keep things coordinated. The VA chart is a very good way to keep us coordinated, keep your providers coordinated. And so make sure that they're putting into the chart the stuff that you think is important that they hear, so that they know about you, what's important to you, and what your goals of the treatment are, what your concerns are, and when you are feeling changes in your condition. So those are the important things. Communication is really important. There's ways after you go that they'll talk about later in this presentation that you can get information that you might not be getting right at your visit. The last thing I'll say is what you should remember is that even with your cancer, most of the cells in your body are healthy cells. And so what your job is to try and take care of those cells, the next presentation about nutrition will really be one key thing that'll be important about you taking care of you and letting the doctors take care of your cancer with the therapies that they have. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. O'Donnell. Just a superb presentation, incredibly informative, a lot of information and advice for our participants. So thank you so much again. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian at the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center, and Ms. Bearden will be discussing nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Johnny. I'm happy to be part of today's presentation. So nutrition and hydration are essential, not only in your tolerance to treatment, but also in providing you the energy to do the things that you enjoy. We've talked about quality of life in this conference today and the value in being able to enjoy life, especially at this time when you're faced with so much. Being able to do the things that you enjoy bring even more value to your life. So nutrition plans are going to vary from patient to patient due to the type of cancer they have, any other health challenges a patient might be experiencing, such as diabetes or heart disease, anything along those lines. So we have a lot of community here at the VA, and that's one of the things that is so great about our veterans coming here. I think they really connect with one another. And so you'll have folks sharing their stories with each other and learning about different things that each person's going through. So there's a lot of support with that. Realizing that your needs can change throughout your treatment journey is also very important. And sometimes this can feel overwhelming for patients. And I want everyone to know it's a very normal thing. Some patients may start a new treatment and maybe there's potential side effects that were different from the treatment they were on before, or they may be adding a treatment. And it's nothing to feel overwhelmed about or anxious about. Your healthcare team is very well versed on how to support you, and that's why we're all here. And at the VA, you're very well taken care of. We have, like we've heard today, social workers, physicians, pharmacists, dietitians, of course, your head and lead oncologist and radiation therapists and surgeons. Everybody's here, and we work as a team to help really support you throughout your journey. One of the things that you can do as a patient is communicate with us. So we know a lot about the treatments and what can be expected, but each person's an individual. And the more you share with us, the more we know how to help you. But the other thing is tell us sooner rather than later. Don't dismiss things as they come up. Specifically, when we talk about nutrition, a lot of patients will sometimes just like, oh, I've just had a bad day today, or man, this week has just been a tough week. It's kind of been an off week. Those are things we need to know, because then we can help support you better. Specifically with nutrition, the dietitian's role is to help achieve the goal of you meeting your nutrition needs. We do that in many different ways, depending on what you're challenged with. We can talk about foods to try, things to avoid, maybe finding easy to no prep options, because fatigue can be a problem that patients are facing, and that's what might be easier for them at that time. There's a lot of information about nutrition and cancer, and sometimes it can feel very overwhelming for patients. And specifically when friends and family learn about you going through a journey like this, they want to be supportive and give you information, but sometimes it can feel like too much. And so coming to your team to really get what's right for you is so important. There's no reason to start flipping your diet upside down, and doing a lot of some of these. There's a lot of fad diets out there that can sound like they're the right thing to do, but it may not be the right thing for you. So reaching out to us and letting the dietitian give you more specific information. Now, some things the dietitian might also provide you is information on your calorie, your protein, and your fluid needs. Those three things are very important. I get a lot of patients who will say, oh, I've got a few pounds to lose. I can spare 20 pounds. And when we're going through cancer treatment, it's not the right time to start focusing so much on making dramatic changes in our weight, but rather nourishing our body. We've heard this today from the physicians in the panel about the value of focusing on taking care of your body. And food is intended to nourish our body, to give it what we need to have it function optimally. So it's very much an operational key component of how our body works. And so the three things that I brought up, the calories, the protein, and the fluid, all play a role in that, okay? There might be times when you're increasing one, decreasing one, adjusting one based on your unique needs. That's why we're here to help do that, help you do that. Now, oftentimes when you lose weight too quickly, you can lose muscle, and muscle is so important, especially when we age. It's kind of a natural process where we start to lose some of our muscle mass, but muscle is one of the most important things we have because it gives us endurance. It gives us the ability to swallow and to speak and to breathe and to move. And so when you're not eating enough, that can start to diminish, and that can do things like make it where you don't have the energy to do the things that you like or put you at higher risk of fall. So we definitely don't want that to happen. So nourishing yourself is very important. Now, we've heard a little bit today about some of the challenges in our population, which, you know, really aren't much different than the general population. But sometimes we see it a little bit more amplified here. And one of the things patients ask me about a lot are resources. Like, I'm having difficulty affording food because I'm not able to work because of my disease. What can I do? And so we definitely rely on our social workers a lot. Our social workers can really connect patients with the resources that are available at the VA. A lot of those resources are connected to your service connection. And so they're going to be able to give you as much option as possible by understanding that component. The other thing is there's a lot in the community that's focused on the veteran. And some of this could be food pantries. It could be services getting you to and from appointments. It could be there's a number of different things that are out there. And so the social worker will be able to help you with that as well. Sometimes with those programs, it's about asking for some documentation. So just being clear on what you're going to need when you go to apply for some of those is going to be very helpful and reduce your stress level. We talk a lot about food and maintaining weight and nourishing our bodies, but watering ourselves is very important too. And so dehydration is something that kind of gets left off the list, but a lot of treatments can actually increase your need for fluid and some might decrease it. So dehydration is very important. And a general guideline is each person needs around 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid a day. It's a guideline. It's a place to start. But then knowing what your needs are can be very helpful. Dehydration can make you feel crummy. It can make you feel like you have a headache. It can make you feel more tired. And remember that fluids that are hydrating, it's pretty much things like water, milk, juice. Those are some great things to start with. And just being mindful of, it's important to hydrate. Oftentimes when we're not as hungry, we're not eating as much, and sometimes we're not drinking as much. So this can be part of the mix as well. Knowing how to take medications for side effects. This can be also another component with your tolerance to eating. And so, you know, there's so much going on. Having an extra set of ears is very important. Bringing a binder, keeping a list. You know, doctor or nurse, can you please print that off for me? I just want to be able to write it down. I can put it on my refrigerator. When should I take this medication? That just helps you stay on it. Because sometimes the timing of the medication really makes a difference in how effective it is in helping you. So in closing, I want to just remind you all, there's so many members of the healthcare team here to support you. Know how to contact us. Communicate with us as soon as things are changing so we can support you as quickly as possible. And with that, I'm going to close my presentation and hand the line back over. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. Just another superb and incredibly informative presentation. I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you again. And now our next speaker is Dr. Francesca Bates. And Dr. Bates is clinical psychologist, oncology psychology at the VA New Jersey Healthcare System. And Dr. Bates will be discussing your veteran's identity, veterans coping with cancer, post-traumatic stress, pain management and survivorship, stresses on caregivers in coordinating care, long-distance caregivers, and self-care tips for veterans living with cancer and their loved ones. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Bates.
Thank you so much, Johnny. It's my pleasure to be here. So I'm going to go ahead and just dive right in. I want to start a little bit and talk about veterans' identity. And really what we're talking about here, and so many of our wonderful speakers before me have highlighted, is what matters to you, right? And keeping that in mind, right? And really when we're talking about identity, we're talking about your sense of self, right? And I think importantly, when we're talking about a cancer diagnosis, is you want to keep in mind that, you know, yes, of course, there are going to be things in your life that change, you know, some, you know, drastically, especially initially, but also think about what doesn't change, right? And I think, you know, thinking about our sense of selves, I think it's important to also keep in mind, you know, who are we as a person, right? You know, as a veteran, who are you? What is your identity, right? You might identify yourself as a problem solver, potentially, or as a doer, right? Or maybe as a helper, right? And that those are part of your identity and how you see yourself. And because of a cancer diagnosis potentially or changes that can happen, you know, with treatment, there are some things that might, you know, shift in potentially physical functioning or even independence, right? You know, as Dr. Bishop had talked about before, there's potential fatigue, right? Or as Ms. Bearden was highlighting, right, changes in strength or appetite. And it's, you know, it might put you in positions where you might feel a little bit more vulnerable or might even have to ask for help. And I think importantly with that is recognizing, you know, one, you have a team, of course, that's here for you, but also, you know, people around you and loved ones and caregivers who are there for you as well. But recognizing that, you know, that sense of self is still you, right? That is still your identity. And you know, are there shifts or adaptations that can be made so that you can, you know, stay in touch with that part of you that matters to you? And I think in doing that, when shifting now to kind of coping with cancer, veterans in a lot of ways, because of your military service, you're almost well set up for what the beginning of cancer care can be. As many of you might already know on this call, when you do initially get a cancer diagnosis, it's not as though it's an immediate, you know, diagnosis, here's the treatment, let's go ahead and start, right? It's a process, right? It all takes time. There's multiple scans, sometimes biopsies, right? There's treatment decisions, right, which are, you know, very in-depth, as many of the providers have highlighted. So even this idea of hurry up and wait, right, can be very helpful in these moments, and just reminding yourself, right, that, you know, just taking that deep breath, right, and recognizing that, you know, even though, you know, there is a mission, right, and you're there to accomplish the mission, right, just, you know, taking that time, right, and leaning into the things that matter to you at the same time as well. And just as I highlighted with those potential changes in functioning, right, you know, the physical changes, which again can come about, you know, from side effects for treatment or also just changes with cancer-related effects, there's also the emotional side of things, right? There can be understandable worry that can come up, right? Worry about your treatment, right? Potential worry about your family or even the future, right? So, and just like, you know, with the fatigue, right? Thinking about how, you know, maybe you might feel a little bit more down, a little bit more depressed, and, you know, there might even be anger, right? Or grief, right? Or anxiety and fear that comes up. And, you know, getting into the idea of the post-traumatic stress and the pain management survivorship, right? If you already came into cancer with a potential PTSD diagnosis, there are PTSD symptoms that can be heightened or even worsened, right? There's this sudden threat, right? So there might be increased anxiety or potential avoidance, right? Or you might even notice yourself being more irritable or isolating, right? When we're talking about pain management, right? If our pain isn't potentially being adequately managed, or if we feel like we're having more pain, it's understandable to get a little bit more frustrated, right? Or feel a little bit more irritable. And even leaning into survivorship, right? Even though, you know, potentially your cancer could be in remission, you still have multiple scans to go to, right? And all these other follow-up appointments, right? So, you know, just in this way, just kind of keeping these in mind, but also, you know, being kind to yourself through it, right? Even if feelings of frustration or irritability start to come up, you know, just noticing these. And we'll get into, you know, some recommendations for these as well. But prior to that, I just also want to lean into caregivers, because I think this is such a huge part of the cancer journey, is that it's not just veterans, of course, who, you know, go through the diagnosis and the treatment, the process of cancer, but also, you know, the people who love you, right? Your loved ones are there with you. You have caregivers who might live with you in the house, or even ones who are long distance caregivers, right? And there's all sorts of challenges that can come up with that, right? Whether you're, you know, potentially making a lot of phone calls and scheduling with appointments, right? Or even worries that come up yourself, you know, some of which you might be potentially holding in, or, you know, not wanting to share with your veteran because you want to be there to support them. I think with all of this, it is important to, you know, hopefully be there for each other in whatever ways feel meaningful, but also the importance of caring for yourself as a caregiver. It's something that in my caregivers group that we have at my VA, we always talk about. It's just reminders of how important it is to care for yourself so that you can be there to care for others. And so, you know, just taking that time for you when you can, or recognizing that you might need a break, you might need to step away, or you might need to do something for yourself. And just being cognizant of that is really important. And in getting into that, I'm going to talk a little bit about self-care recommendations, not just for veterans living with cancer, but also your loved ones as well. And going back to something that Dr. O'Donnell highlighted, which I think is so important, is that it's really thinking about what matters to you, right? What your values are and what brings you meaning, right? So I think, you know, as was mentioned, engaging in enjoyable activities, Dr. Miranda started us off, you know, leaning into that, right? Those enjoyable activities are important. Taking time, if you can, a trip, but even listening to music, right? Whatever it is that brings you joy, right? Even connecting with nature, things that can bring you into the present moment. And I think all of these things can be so helpful in remembering that, you know, even though so many appointments can make you feel like, you know, I'm just a cancer patient, I need to focus on all of these things, a good part of this is remembering that you are a person, yes, living with cancer, but a person first, right? And remembering what matters to you through this process, I think, can be so invaluable in being able to support not just yourself, but also everyone around you. And finally, I'll also say how, you know, there are wonderful support groups out there, or you can speak to people individually, but you have a whole team of people who care for you. Thank you so much, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bates. Again, just a really wonderful presentation. You covered a lot of information in a short amount of time. I know that there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much again. And our next speaker is Dr. Alba Lopez. Dr. Lopez is a U.S. Army veteran, program manager, post 9/11 military to VA M2VA case management program, patient care services social work at the VA New Jersey healthcare system, and Dr. Lopez will be discussing finding and using practical resources, including veteran-specific resources. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Lopez.
Thank you, Zani, for the introduction. So, you know, talking about veteran resources for cancer care and diagnosis, the VA is at the forefront of providing comprehensive support and services to veterans, because nobody knows veterans better than the VA. It's what we do, and we do it well. And one of the ways we do that is cancer screenings are a regular part of healthcare. Unlike community providers, when we have somebody join our healthcare system, they work with that provider for the trajectory of their healthcare experience here. So they have regular cancer screenings, which include mammograms, colonoscopies, lung CT scans, and prostate exams. We have diagnostic services on site and in the community, such as imaging, labs, biopsies. We offer cancer treatment options, such as surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, immunotherapy, and targeted therapy. And we have specialty care throughout various VA centers and academic partners. Our national cancer programs that specifically focus on veterans are the VA Lung Cancer Screening Initiative, the Colorectal and Prostate Cancer Programs, the VA National Oncology Program, which offers precision oncology and genetic counseling, and also the Women's Health Oncology Support for Breast, Ovarian, and Cervical Cancers. We also have a great deal of information available, and at East Orange, we have an entire center that focuses on military exposure and toxic exposure-related cancer care. They focus on cohort-specific conditions that may be related to burn pits and airborne hazards, such as Desert Storm and the OEF, OIF, OND post 9/11 group for burn pits and airborne hazards, Agent Orange, as you would see in the Vietnam era veterans, radiation and Gulf War exposures, Camp Lejeune water contamination, and many of you have probably heard about the PACT Act, which extends the enrollment period for veterans who may have presumptive cancers associated with their era of service. Care coordination and support services offered through the VA includes nurse navigators, patient aligned care teams, previously called PPGs or primary provider groups, the M2VA or, you know, military to VA program, which I work with here at the East Orange campus, offers case management for post 9/11 veterans. We have whole health services, which offers alternative medicines and maybe things that are more holistic in their approach for folks that, you know, want to try things like sound baths or chiropractic services in terms of pain management. It's just one more layer of care and options available to veterans. We also offer limited transportation support, and we also have survivorship program, which you heard a little bit about earlier. The mental health and social support, as you know, previously mentioned by my colleagues, is a big part of what we do. We have a robust social work services department. There are a variety of groups associated with oncology and survivorship, and we have a robust mental health program and peer support network. The mental health clinic is on site, and they offer outpatient services. We also get support from the vet centers in our area. The VA is really unique in their ability to offer palliative care and pain management to anyone that is eligible at no cost. And it's another way to focus on the quality of life and rehumanizing the experience. And there's also housing programs. You know, one of my colleagues talked about the challenges, particularly in rural areas, where housing insecurity may be an obstacle to treatment. We have programs like HUD-VASH, which is a Section 8 subsidized housing experience that comes with a five-year case management component and really helps people that struggle with housing security to become stably housed. And so many good outcomes happen when someone doesn't have to worry about where they're going to lay their head tonight. And it becomes affordable because it's income-based. We also have various transitional housing options and community partners that assist us with things such as security deposits and furniture vouchers. The easiest way for veterans to access cancer care is, of course, to enroll in the VA healthcare system nearest to them. They can contact their primary care provider for screenings or referrals. They can also reach out to the VA if they've been diagnosed outside of the VA system and coordinate their care. They can contact through the VA main line for appointments, our call center. And the Women's Veterans Program is very focused on proactive diagnostics and, you know, mammograms and community partners that work on women's health for anything that needs supplementing is part of what they coordinate for us. Anyone who's interested, you know, can go to www.va.gov. That's the landing page used to locate the VA site closest to you and provides information about services nearest your location. We also have the warrelatedillnesses.va.gov air hazards network, and they have a listing of ongoing studies which include military toxic exposure induced diseases, novel treatments including bird pit exposures and the Gulf War illnesses, neurodegenerative diseases such as for brain and spinal cord and associated treatments, precision oncology, causes of suicide behavior and suicide prevention, traumatic brain injury, and recovery. If you need any of that information, I'll be happy to take questions during the Q&A. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lopez. Just another incredibly informative presentation. You covered a lot of information in a very short amount of time. So thank you so much again. I know that there will be questions for you during the Q&A. So now I'm going to introduce our last speaker, and our last speaker is Cecilia Cooper. Ms. Cooper is an oncology social worker, the Healing Hearts Program Coordinator here at Cancer Care, and Ms. Cooper will be discussing Cancer Care's free national programs and services, as well as our Hopeline and website. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Cooper.
Thank you so much, Johnny, and thank you so much, everyone, for taking the time to be with us today on such an important topic. I'm going to share information about Cancer Care's free national programs and services. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, online support groups, educational and community programs, publications, and potential financial and copay assistance for medication. To add just a little bit more of information about our services, our resource navigation services involves a short-term, strengths-based approach to finding additional support and resources, either emotional or financial, for people with cancer and other caregivers. Our national online support groups take place using password-protected messaging boards, and they're led by oncology social workers who offer support and guidance. You can register on our website to join an online support group that is specific to you. We also have on CancerCare's website, which is cancercare.org, a wide range of reading materials and educational support organized by cancer type and topic. This includes recorded Connect education workshops like today's presentation, publications, Cancer Care Out Loud, the Cancer Care podcast, community programs like our Ways to Wellness series. People can register for many of our programs online or through our Hope Line. As others have mentioned on this call, navigating cancer, a cancer diagnosis, is not something you have to go through alone as a patient or caregiver. By calling our Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673, if you live in the United States, individuals have access to cancer care oncology social workers who can help connect you with support. Building community and reaching out for help isn't always easy, but it's important to both maintain your support systems and coping strategies when dealing with a cancer diagnosis. Thank you very much for your time today and interest in our topic. I'm going to turn this back to Joni.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cooper. Your presentation was stellar. And I wanted to mention that for those listening on right now, you will get an email alongside a survey, and it will have all the resources that were discussed today. So please don't feel like you need to write anything down. You'll receive it in about a week to 10 days after this program. So everything mentioned by each speaker will be in that email and survey. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. We're going to take as many of your questions as possible. I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
Thank you, Bella. We have quite a few questions. Our first question is for Ms. Cooper. Where would be the best place to start looking for support groups as someone in active treatment? I'm looking for myself, and my partner is interested as well.
Thank you so much for asking such an important question. A good place to start is with your oncology team, especially the social worker at your treatment center. They can help connect you with local or virtual support groups that fit your diagnosis, stage of treatment, and needs. For veterans, it can also be helpful to explore the VA system or veterans-focused organizations, which can provide spaces where shared military experience is understood. There are many resources available to you for support. Support groups can reduce isolation, normalize what you're feeling, and provide practical tools for coping. Reaching out and connecting with others can make a real difference, and you don't have to do it alone.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cooper. I have a question here for Dr. Lopez. Can you please discuss more about the role of palliative care?
Oh, sure. Palliative care is an interdisciplinary team that works with someone that has a catastrophic diagnosis. They are exceptionally good at treating the whole person and supporting the caregiver by providing symptom management and, you know, honoring your quality of life and helping you look at what you want to do to guide your care. Because sometimes, you know, the symptoms that go with treatment are uncomfortable. And what ends up, you know, causing people distress and pain is something that can be addressed on an outpatient basis. They're also good, you know, if you need to be inpatient to adjust or titrate medications, coordinating that care. But it's really focused on honoring the individual's autonomy, keeping the person comfortable, and putting them at the center of directing their health care.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lopez. Sure. I actually have another question for you. Can you discuss arranging home care?
Sure. Home care is done through the Office of Geriatric Extended Care. Usually your primary care social worker or oncology social worker works with your provider to coordinate those services. The provider places the order, and then based on your level of service connection, the number of hours may vary. Most veterans that demonstrate a need in two or more ADLs can get anywhere from 4 to 11 hours of home care services. Veterans that are 70% service connected or higher will be eligible for second range, which is up to 44 hours of home care a week. And then if there are skilled needs, that's a separate referral. But basic home health aid services for custodial needs, such as, let's say, doing a load of wash, helping with meal prep, or some light housekeeping, can be done through your provider and social work. Skilled, if it has to do with wound care or, you know, IV administration of antibiotics, that is a different referral, again, done through the provider and coordinated through the public health nurse.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Lopez.
Sure.
I have a question for Dr. Miranda. How would an oncologist and/or supportive care doctor address depression? Would a veteran be referred to a mental health professional? And can you also speak to what that care looks like outside of the VA?
Thank you for your question. So this is actually such an important issue. Depression, not only in veterans, but in the general population, is actually underdiagnosed and undertreated in patients with cancer. And so I think it's especially important for us to be discussing this with our patients, especially at the beginning of their diagnosis, but throughout the treatment as well, as new things come up. So a couple things. It really will depend on the patient as far as an action plan and the resources available. In patients who have a history of mental health issues, they may already have a mental health team that I'm coordinating with. For patients who are experiencing depression for the first time, it really may depend on the specific VA and what options are available. VAs in general are very good and have a lot of mental health support, but I'll tell you the specialty of having maybe an oncology specialist mental health provider will vary from VA to VA. So the Houston VA is rather large, and we have a pretty comprehensive cancer center here, and so we have had an oncologic psychologist within our cancer center who works just with our patients with cancer. But not all VAs will have necessarily that specialized resource. So I think the most important thing is to for patients is if you're noticing a change in your mood, in your sleep, in your appetite, these are all signs that you may have depression associated with your cancer, and I think it's important to bring this up with your oncologist and a palliative care doctor if you're seeing one. And certainly oncologists and palliative care have at least some skills in being able to offer some support, whether it be first-line medications for depression and being able to refer to psychiatry and psychology. But I would absolutely ask what other specific resources are available within your VA and your community.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Miranda. We have one more question, and then we'll move on to our takeaways. So this question, it's for Dr. Bishop. Is it ever too late for a veteran to connect with the VA? I've met quite a few veterans who proudly served but felt it was too complicated to connect with VA medical services. Any suggestions?
Yes, thank you so much. We welcome our veterans. We will do everything we can to get you enrolled in our services. What I would recommend is that you reach out to your, there's a department there, and for my social workers that are also joining us on the call, an eligibility officer we have available. And we definitely have patients come to our VA that didn't think we could provide them services, or they've met other veterans that were very pleased with the care and would like to continue with their care here at the VA. So I would encourage you, please reach out to our eligibility office. Our goal is to make this work for you. We are encouraging you to join us. We are trying every way we can not to make it a difficult process. We will advocate for you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Bishop. And now I'm going to ask each of our speakers to provide takeaways, just about a minute takeaway. We'll start with Dr. Miranda, then Dr. Bishop, Dr. O'Donnell, Ms. Bearden, Dr. Bates, Dr. Lopez, and Ms. Cooper. Dr. Miranda?
Thank you again so much for having me. I think everyone here has sort of focused on the individual patient and the fact that what matters to you may not matter to the next person. And so I agree. I think this is the most important thing to bring up to your oncologist so that they can tailor their treatment and the schedule to your needs and your wants.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Bishop?
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed it and learning from our other speakers. I just wanted to state that fatigue can have such an impact on your life and affect the quality of life of not only you, but your loved ones. It is a symptom that we should be looking at throughout the whole continuum of your care. Not just one time, it should be regularly evaluated, knowing that fatigue can last after your treatment. Also, it's important to know that fatigue does not mean that cancer has returned, and that's a fear that some of our patients have. I also would like to state that our goal at the VA is to be sure that you have services that other members in our community get, and that includes access to clinical trials, specialty services, and services that are not provided at the VA but are essential for your care. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bishop. And Dr. O'Donnell?
Yes. One of the things we didn't talk about was that there's a national plan for oncology within the VA. And the bottom line is that the VA wants every patient with cancer who seeks care within the VA to get the best care possible. And if you Google that, you'll see some of the details of the cancer plan that comes from the national VA leadership. My topic was communication. It's key. And what you need to do is make sure you're heard, you listen to, make sure you understand, and make sure you get your questions asked and answered, that you tell the things that are important to you, the symptoms that you have, and then you work to help make sure everybody is coordinated within your care. The final message is that most of you is not cancer. If you have cancer, most of your body are normal cells, and one of your jobs is to try and keep them as healthy as possible, and that'll help you and your body to fight the cancer.
Thank you so much, Dr. O'Donnell. And Ms. Bearden?
Yeah, I mean, I think just knowing your healthcare team and how to contact them. I know sometimes it can be overwhelming and challenging, but try and grab your practitioner's card and ask them the best way for you to contact them. Through the VA, we have a My Healthy Vet system that you can message providers through. Sometimes that's a little bit easier for patients, especially for time of day and that sort of thing, to get their request across. And just know who we are. Know that you have a whole team of people who are here to support you, and contact us as soon as something changes so we can help you as quickly as possible.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. And Dr. Bates?
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I just wanted to highlight that, you know, with cancer care and treatment and survivorship as well, you know, well beyond cancer care, there, you know, initially it can feel like there are so many appointments and so many things you're doing and going through. And it can be understandable, a shock to the person and the family members. And I think importantly with all of this is to recognize that, you know, if you need, you know, support of any sort, right, or just need to be able to talk through, you know, what this is like for you, that there are wonderful avenues to do that out there. You know, at all of the VAs, thankfully, there are really great support groups. You know, Cancer Cares obviously has these wonderful support groups available, or there's the opportunity to speak to someone individually, right, whether a licensed social worker or a psychologist, right, someone who you can, you know, talk through what's going on. And also lean into the emotional sides, right? As Dr. Bishop was highlighting with depression, right? There can be things that come up for people, understandably. And so being able to connect with someone professionally and be able to talk through it can be so helpful through this journey. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bates. And Dr. Lopez?
I think just dovetailing on what Dr. Bates and Dr. Bishop said, you know, we don't want anybody to suffer or to feel isolated. So, you know, one of the things I think military folks really pride themselves on is this tough-mindedness and keeping things kind of close to the chest and kind of, you know, making their way through difficult things alone. And there's no need to do that. There's a lot of support and assistance available at the VA, whether it's mental health or in-home services or, you know, pain management. There is no need to suffer in silence. And please don't ever assume that you are not eligible for a service or eligible for service connection. Please feel free to ask the provider. If they don't have the answer, they will put you in touch with someone that can help you. And that's my takeaway. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lopez. And Ms. Cooper?
Yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity again. And as it was mentioned before, everyone's cancer is unique, right? Their experience is unique. And it is important to communicate your needs to your medical team and be able to establish a support system. I just want to emphasize the importance of the support and also taking care of your body, but also taking care of your mental health, whether you are a patient or a caregiver or a family member who knows somebody who's dealing with cancer. So the support is available. Please reach out. You don't have to go through this alone.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cooper. I want to take this moment to thank all of our speakers. This workshop has been phenomenal. And I also want to thank all of our participants. Today's program was particularly exceptional because of the questions asked and the way our speakers addressed those questions. I want to thank everyone for being here and for staying on. And I just want to say a few words, though. For those of you who didn't have your question answered, I would like you to go back to your healthcare team and ask them your questions. Remember, you've learned a great deal from today's program, and I want you to take what you've learned and go back to your treating healthcare team and ask your question again. And then lastly, I just want to mention, I don't want anyone to leave this program feeling as if they are alone. You are not alone. I think you've learned today that you have a community support here at Cancer Care, the VA, and many of the resources that we've mentioned here today. I appreciate your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.